Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with my co-host, Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Good to be back in the saddle with you here, Ken, for our weekly GM show. Mixed feelings after the Cleveland game. Certainly great to stack the fourth win in a row and pull to 500. But a little concerned about the offensive line, considering the way they've fared the last couple weeks.
Now, lots of reasons for concern about this offensive line. Obviously, I got multiple concerns, but one of them is just the across the board mediocrity makes it very hard to change anything, particularly in season in a big way. But you know, in the longer term, it's a more substantial rebuild project. If you had two stars and three players who weren't playing well, you know, that you're ready to discard right away, I think it'd be an easier choice anyway. But I know you have an idea for a change this week.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that's a good point. If they did have an excellent guard, then you could kind of reshuffle things, slide a certain way, give double teams a certain way. But when almost everyone's getting beat, you know, once out of every, you know, handful of snaps, it's very difficult to do that. John Harbaugh made some comments in the media that he thought the O-line was playing pretty darn well, and he's evaluating them in practice and putting the best five on the field. I find that a little bit disingenuous because I think it's difficult to evaluate in practice when they're limited contact, as you have noted in training camp several times.
I mean, first of all, let me just give you my general feeling about anything Harbaugh might say nice about a player during interview. It's just, unless he goes to extreme length to be particularly salty about something or to praise a player in a way that is completely over the top. Remember when he talked about Chuck Clark and sticking the green dot in it, he was bold, brief, and something else, brave and brief or something. He's not doing that. He's saying, yeah, we're evaluated every week. It's something we look at, but the reports I'm getting from Warhop, which is grading I trust, is that, you know, they're improving, and I look at them, I kind of see improvement. And, you know, he's not trying to lead you in any particular direction. I think there's indications that they're unhappy with the play in terms of things he said. But in any case, if you're really saying, oh, John Harbaugh is lying to us, oh my God, listen to him, this is complete. I mean, you know, shame on you. What are you expecting? I expect him to lie about injuries. I expect him to basically mislead the other team through the media. He does a good job of it. And that's what that's what he's supposed to do. But anyway, let's talk.
So I think the time has come to consider a rotation. And we touched on that last week. I know you had a video clip that you put out that touched on that as well. And I'm not sure if it's Emory Jones. I'm not sure if it's Ben Cleveland. I'm not sure if it's both. But I do think that Falele has his play has degraded to the point where giving Ben Cleveland a series just to see what he can do, and now's the perfect time to do it, playing a Jets team at home when you're two touchdown favorites. Cleveland just hasn't really been given a chance since 2023, not even in preseason last year. And in 162 snaps in 23, via PFF, he was an 80.7 pass blocker and a 64.6 run blocker, compared to Falele this year, 61 pass blocker and a 50 run blocker. So different sample size. Falele's played three times as many snaps, but a series here or there, I think, really should be on the table at this point, because Lamar has now suffered four injuries: foot, hamstring, knee, and now ankle. And protection needs to be prioritized. I think if the Ravens do have a chance of making a deeper run, you know, even getting to a conference championship game this season, the all improvement, shuffling it, figuring it out, making it work in some way or another, you know, turn over every stone, give these guys a couple reps just to see if maybe they can cause a spark and change the trajectory.
Yeah, I have no problem with it, first of all, for starters. I think that it's more likely to occur at right guard than at left guard for a couple of reasons, even though there are people who would tell you that Voorhees has not even played as well as Falele has, and he's a little bit lower in the PFF rankings. Falele, the only thing I object to in any way, shape, or form about Falele, who's a very frustrating right guard, is the notion that he's by far the worst guard in the league and crap like that. That's so hyperbolic. It doesn't even make any sense. Okay. There are a bunch of guards worse, including ones the Ravens have already seen on the opponents this year. The Miami guards are both terrible. They're both much worse pass blockers and worse run blockers, both. Sure. And so it's hard to you know, fathom all the hyperbole involved in this sort of thing. So anyway, he's coming off a terrible game. There are good reasons to make a move now. It's been two straight very bad weeks. He's headed in the wrong direction. In a lot of ways, his year has been very frustrating because the last five games were so good last year. And you know, we had higher hopes for him taking another step forward. Hasn't really occurred. There's no reason why the Ravens should be considering, you know, some very minor gain. It's even possible in a 2027 compensatory pick. And I don't believe that's happening, by the way. I don't believe that's part of the calculus right now. Ravens have so many departing free agents that's really not the issue. But I buy it. I'm okay with a rotation. I think it's probably warranted at this point. And the other thing I'd say to everybody who's watching this is be ready to change your mind. If Falele plays well, be ready to change your mind. If Falele completely falls and you're one of the holdouts, you know, be ready to change your mind. And you know, just use the additional data points that come to you as additional information about him. Use it if Cleveland got to play two series and he looks fantastic, I think that'll change things too. And
I think that's what frustrates some folks about what Harbaugh says, is it seems that for certain players, the players that he sticks his neck out for, he is a little bit stubborn. But that's his prerogative, I suppose, but not when it's going to, you know, cost the team. Falele, the reason why we use PFF, or at least the reason why I reference PFF, is because it gives you a snapshot of how do they compare to their peers. Because none of us have the time or the motivation to sit there and grade offensive guards for all 32 teams. That's really the best use. I did have a thought on Falele, and I thought that you know, there's been clips. That was really when they stood up for him, was when there was some clips going around in, I think it was during the preseason, where he looks just totally awful. And that doesn't count worse than, you know, missing a block. If you miss a block, you miss a block. I'm wondering if there should be a certain way to adjust where if you whiff in the first second of the rep, is that worse than whiffing in the second of the rep, so to speak?
Okay, so both our systems, PFF and mine, don't necessarily look at the timing of the whiff, but we have variability of the event that can be done. Now, PFF, I think, will only charge you for a pressure, and they don't make a worse charge if you get a sack. I have -6 to be doled out to whoever was responsible on every sack, on -3 on a quarterback hit and -2 on a pressure. And that can go to multiple players, but it's, you know, there's points to be allocated there. Specifically, losing early is an interesting concept. I think you're more likely to cause a pressure if that occurs. And when it happens, that will certainly, you know, stick up in either system. It's an interesting concept. I'd have to think about how you would apply something like that. And whether or not you'd be double counting something, like if Falele gets the entire charge for a pressure, but the pressure happens earlier, what is that telling you about it? I mean, if he has some leverage situation where he's more likely allowed early pressure, but then there's offsetting events for that, what am I really counting? But anyway, I'm not saying it's a terrible idea. Well, I just kind of pondering it.
I think PFF used to have, you know, -2 to +2. So if you lost early, maybe that would be all the way at -2. But I'm not sure how that works. That's neither here nor there. Right now, they're charted by some metrics as the 32nd in pressure rate allowed. I haven't been banging on Falele all year. I really haven't. You can go back and listen to all our shows. Mm-hmm. But I do think now is the time. You got to shake it up. This can't continue. And I know they face two tough fronts, but you know, the Jets have a decent front. You got Pittsburgh on tap. You got some, and the Ravens were Super Bowl favorites coming in this year. I mean, you know, I put a poll out earlier today. What does Harbaugh need to accomplish to gain your support? And some people were saying he's got to win the Super Bowl or he's got to, you know, his playoffs. The vast majority of people said win two games. And I'm actually in that camp. I think
two games.
It's conference championship game appearance. You've had Lamar for 8 years now. You got to make at least a second conference champ. And I mean, even Alec Poulianos has said Super Bowl. I've heard Sarah Ellison say Super Bowl, and that should be it, because at some point Lamar's not going to be bouncing back from these injuries so quickly. So anyway, offensive line, I think, is really the priority.
What I'm hearing there is a level of frustration that I understand as a Ravens fan, as a season ticket holder, as everything. You know, I understand the level of frustration. I think it's massively unfair, or it's not maybe particularly useful to reference the past in the way you have, that it's been 8 years, it's been this, it's been that, to increase the expectation. And there's just too much of a risk of frustration. And I'm talking about for your own personal well-being, not mine. I can take whatever I feel like is a reasonable level of expectation. But I mean, is it fair to have a high expectation of this team? Sure. They were in two straight years, they've been one of the best rosters in football. It's fair that coming into this year, we'd have very high expectations. We thought this was the best roster in football. They certainly have not played like it. Now, even injuries aside, they haven't played like it.
Yeah, I think two of the games, you could definitely say the Texans game and the Rams game, they were too injured to compete. So you'll give them those two. The other three they lost, they probably were healthy enough to at least compete or win. I think they were probably healthy enough to win. But Mike Sander put out an article from The Athletic about a month ago. No head coach has gone further this far between Super Bowls and won a second one. So, you know, that's a little bit of data there. Not that trends are meant to be broken. But I do think that at some point the frustration builds and it sticks in the back of the players' minds, as they mentioned after that Buffalo game, and fresh blood is necessary. So hopefully they can get this offensive line turned around. I do think that's the key for the rest of the season going forward.
Okay. Well, I'd agree with that. That's certainly one of the places they can do. And the other thing that I pointed to is when they make in-season changes, they've proven highly amenable to making such changes in terms of going to rotation first and then to a full change. And if you look back to 2012, they actually did the full change, right, three positions all at once, which was the hallmark of that Super Bowl run. I'll go with, you know, Flacco's great play. And that offensive line with Michael Orr at left tackle, the big problem, had been one of the reasons they were as low as 12th in DVOA that year. And we're the least impressive team of the first five Harbaugh years.
Unfortunately, they don't necessarily have a player with the first round pedigree of Brian McKinney sitting on the bench right now. But I think you got to try something. At least that's my hope.
All right. Well, it may well happen. Let's talk about the injury report this week. And unless we have something else we need to get to before that, but
nope. So this is a release from the Ravens. Lamar Jackson was a full participant on Wednesday, as was Ronnie Stanley. Lamar has an ankle. Ronnie was ill on Thursday. And then Justice Hill, who missed last game with a toe, and Marlon Humphrey with a finger, were also both full on Thursday. Limited, Isaiah Likely with a calf, Andrew Voorhees with a foot, Roquan Smith with a hamstring, and Kyle Hamilton with a shoulder/groin. Ugh. And did not participate, Rashad Bateman with a high ankle sprain, and Keon Martin with a rib injury that caused him to spend the night in a hospital in Cleveland, I believe, last Sunday.
Oh, wow. And I didn't know that. That's a bad one. That'll, you know, of these, obviously DNPs mean the most. And Rashad Bateman, we didn't really have a lot of hope that he would necessarily be back this week. We didn't know one way or the other. But Keon Martin, you know, his injury being this serious is pretty serious for this Ravens team in terms of what they have remaining at slot corner. So this would be a big loss for them if it holds up. And you know, you look at the number and the moves that have not been made. There's been 10 of 10, you know, players on the injury report this week, and fortunately four of them are back full, and so I don't expect an injury designation for the game for them tomorrow. But even if all the remaining limiteds and DNPs were out, I mean, that pretty much eats up all of the potential inactives they have.
I mean, I think you got to also keep in mind that the Ravens have a short week playing Cincinnati on Thursday following this game, so a little bit extra rest is probably beneficial. A little bit maybe odd that they would do it on Wednesday instead of Friday, Yeah, we'll see. I mean, likely with the calf, Voorhees with the foot, Roquan with the hamstring, and Hamilton with the shoulder slash groin were the four limiteds. So I think they'll be okay at slot corner with Marlon coming back, because now Marlon can play slot in dime, and Awuzie and Higgins can stay outside.
Yeah, but, good point.
Maybe with Voorhees nursing a foot, this is also an opportunity it's just a built-in opportunity to shake up the O-line that way.
Yeah, that would certainly be true. The other options that they have on the bench, both Jones and Cleveland, are really better left guard options. Sorry, right guard options. They're big, powerful men, longer, and have a better opportunity to pivot the defensive tackle and open the front gate, as I would say. I don't think that it's one of the things about Voorhees that he's made 19 consecutive pulls right now, even though he's been up and down in terms of plays. The bad thing about Voorhees is his bad games have been truly awful, and he's had some other games which have been pretty good. It's their last little bit of mobility at the guard position, though, if they lose him and either by choice or by injury have to make a change.
Mm-hmm. Other musings, I suppose, about the activations. So Amani Oruwariye was called up last week and didn't play, which was interesting. I don't recall that happening before. Carl Lawson has still not been called up, and John Harbaugh made note that he believes Trenton Simpson is faring well as a designated pass rusher, outside linebacker. And I would agree. I think I know he doesn't have ideal size, but the results support that notion. Chandler Martin was also caught up with Jay Higgins going to injury reserve to be a special teams linebacker. So it will be a roster crunch. If Justice Hill returns, do they activate Ali as the fourth running back for special teams? Is it Martin? I just really hope they don't go too heavy on special teams where you're back down to four defensive linemen or three outside linebackers.
Oh yeah. I would hope they would not do that. The nine is the only thing that makes me feel a little bit safe about that. It means they would have one change that would be possible, which would be Ajabo for Lawson if they wanted to do it, but they played Ajabo so many snaps on early downs this last week. I don't see that coming. I think he's going to be there again. I can't point to anything in his game that I'm really happy with, in terms of.
I saw one good rep against the run last week. I think that's the first good rep I've seen all season. He just looked physical, came off the edge, shed the, I believe, tight end that was blocking him and had a partial tackle.
All right. Well, I'm not going to try narrative build with a single play, my feelings about that. So
we'll just
keep going here. All right. So, anyway, inactive list will be an interesting thing. It'll also be interesting, I guess, on Saturday to see what moves they make from that from the practice squad, whether they'll go with Oruwariye again also or move on. A little surprising to me they didn't do Marquise Robinson, but I guess they probably don't want to put him out there.
Keep him under wraps, maybe.
We've got a good question, which was from CK Ravens fan about how we would rebuild the 2026 offensive line. So we thought we'd spend a reasonable portion of the show on this today. Regardless of what you feel about these players, substantial rebuilds will be needed just because of players who leave the team. Falele is a UFA, for example, and so is Linderbaum. That could be rectified. They could sign Linderbaum. I think it's unlikely that they're going to sign Fa'alele at this point. I actually think that he will be more valued somewhere else than here in Baltimore in terms of of what he can do. But let's go through them. So we go by position for starters. But when we do that, a lot of the problem to me is depth.
So just top line, I think it's change of coach. I think it's replacing George Warhop. Teams don't let above average offensive line coaches easily exit or leave their team or their, and this is Warhop's resume before he entered Baltimore. 2 years with the Rams, 5 years with the Cardinals, 2 years with Dallas, 4 years with San Fran, 4 years with Cleveland, 5 years with Tampa, 3 with Jacksonville, 1 with Houston, did not have a job in 23. And then, as we know, was the emergency replacement in 24 when Joe D unfortunately passed away. Joe D was with the Ravens for 8 years for comparison. So I think that tells you a little bit of something about his pedigree. And I think that could, you know, just a change of coach and you get a really heavy hitter offensive line coach could be a tremendous improvement. Just that.
I'm with you on that. And unfortunately the Ravens backup, the assistant coach for the offensive line is Travell Wharton, or it was last year. I'm not 100% sure he's still with the team, but I think he is. Wharton would have probably got the job last time in before 24 if they really thought he was ready, or if they really thought he might even ever ascend to the role. So they could have left a year. He is still with the team.
He's still there. Yes, he is. Yeah. Yep.
So I would expect they would go to the college ranks and maybe find a great scheme offensive lineman. Now you could do it. There are two types. You can go get a great scheme guy, and then he probably is going to want to be an offensive coordinator someday. Mm-hmm. A lot of offensive line coaches, they're just great teachers of offensive line fundamentals. I think that's what Joe D was more than being a scheme guy. I'm not saying he didn't have any input into the game plan, but he's more of a coaching fundamentals guy. You watch the guy coach. It's, you know, it's written all over him. I think the Ravens can go to college, and this should be one of the most attractive jobs in the entire NFL in terms of, hey, you can get this job. And by the way, if you do it well, you know, it's a 20-year payday for you here of really doing. And you know, you can, the age you can hire at is a little bit older on the offensive line if you know he's going to stay there for longer. I think that's a fairly common thing. Like I'd be generally speaking opposed to hiring a coach who was in his 50s because you lose the dynasty value of a potential hire, like they got with Harbaugh, or like the Steelers got with Tomlin. But there's an overwhelming number of dynasty head coaches have been hired. Guys have been hired in their 30s for their first head coaching job as opposed to later.
I would definitely agree with the going the technician route. And just off the top of my head, there's a gentleman by the name of Alex Atkins, who is from the collegiate ranks, who might fit the bill. He was with Florida State, and I believe he's in the SEC now, but he is known as an offensive line technician. And he's a younger guy. I think he's in his late 30s.
Yeah, maybe you could look up for me how old Brad Davis of LSU is, but he's a guy who was a Warhop was a big fan of. I think the Ravens are going to make this, you know, good for Warhop. If Warhop came in, he really helped them out at a tough time, and it maybe they have even a succession plan or something, because you don't need it. It doesn't have to be a long runway. Warhop's already, you know, 65 years old or so, so he's about ready to retire anyway. But
Davis is 45, and if I'm Steve Bisciotti and the salaries of the coaches are not accounted for in the salary cap, I would invest a good fortune in a tremendous offensive line coach.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, let's move on to the positions, and we don't want to spend too much time on the coach themselves. Left tackle, Ronnie Stanley's play has been a disappointment this year. Somebody posted on Reddit, you know, what's different about the offensive line? Is it just McCary? Because otherwise the guys are all the same. And in truth, most of the guys are the same. McCary McCary to Voorhees 25 is a big downgrade. But the other big downgrade is Roddy Stanley 24 to Ronnie Stanley 25. He's not played as well. Certainly have to hope his play rebounds. His salary is guaranteed for next year. Effectively, he's got $44 million due over 2 years. Is basically the earliest point the Ravens can get out of this deal.
Yeah. $30 million dead money after this year for next year. So he's going to be on the roster next year. Got left, as you like to call it sometimes, the old mate contract a little bit there. We thought he signed for a discount. The injuries, you know, saps on his ability. Miles Garrett's a tough assignment for anybody. You can be the best left tackle in the league, Trent Williams, if he even still is anymore, and he's still going to struggle. So you can't be running up too much for that, but you hope that he can, you know, regain some health as the season progresses and give them some stability at the left tackle position.
Yeah, a lot of players that he would still have to face this year that are potentially outstanding pass rushers. Now, one of the big things that's been interesting is on the inactive report the last 2 weeks is that Vinson has been active over Noteboom, which is a massive change. And we've talked about it, I think, at least once on this show, but it's an unbelievably significant vote of confidence in Vinson that he's active over Noteboom. Not because you know, Noteboom is particularly great, but because we were really worried about where Vincent was on the developmental track, and we just don't have any window into that.
Yeah, it seems that Vincent's on the fast track. He was fast tracked a little bit, you know, in the preseason. I know he exceeded your expectations, and I defer to you on most offensive line play. And you know, worst case scenario, Ronnie is going to be your starting left tackle next year. If he's really struggling and Vincent keeps progressing, there he could take over midseason some point next year.
Yep. That certainly could happen. And I don't see anything that's going to put Noteboom back ahead of Vincent on a week-by-week basis. I thought, you know, it could be an illness or a personal situation when it happens once. Happens twice. That's they put their stake in the ground there on with Carson Vincent. You know, if you're looking at the draft, I don't see the Ravens taking any kind of big swing at offensive tackle. I think Vincent is their developmental guy. I don't think you effectively hire over him by going out in the first round, say, and getting another offensive tackle, right, or even in the second or third. We'll get to Rosengarten a little later in terms of his play. It hasn't been ideal, but I think they need to use the full runway with what they've gotten out of 2 years of Rosengarten so far, or year and a half. So far, they're going to want to see him for the full four.
I agree. I think he's fair well enough to be penciled in. But unless we have anything more on Ronnie, we'll move on to Andrew Voorhees. I do expect him to be back, at least in a backup capacity. Hasn't been consistent enough, as you mentioned earlier, to be necessarily penciled in as a starter. We'll see how he fares over the next seven games or so. I would be okay with drafting a first or second round stud, if you can get him, that can upgrade one of your guard spots, maybe even has tackle versatility. Potentially, there's a guy that plays for the Miami Hurricanes. I believe his name is Maoyaga, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I did ask Chris, who's already digging into prospects, and he thinks he's going to be the first lineman off the board, so he might not be in range. But if you could get somebody who's a stud guard who can also play some tackle, like a Marshall Yanda, who was a third-round pick, no one knew how great he was, that would probably be one of the ideal picks for me in the early rounds.
Right. So, and I don't have any problem taking a tackle who's moving to guard, but I don't want to take that guy in round one typically. Most tackles who everybody knows are moving to guard aren't going in round one anyway. They're going a little later.
I certainly the fifth round option is a factor. But I wouldn't 100% eliminate the possibility of an IOL in the first because of that. Because if the player's good enough, you can probably re-sign him before he gets to that fifth round, like the Ravens did with Kyle Hamilton, for example. Obviously, different position. I don't know. The more I've, you know, evolved my roster construction philosophy, I do think the trenches really need to be fortified. That's what wins in the postseason. And the Ravens, if you look back at all their postseason losses in the Lamar era, they pretty much lost the trenches almost every single game.
Well, first of all, kudos on any evolution of thought. That's always good. And you know, we continually probe at each other in these kind of in these kind of things to talk about that. I'm for you. I'm happy to pay an offensive lineman. The loss of frictions, particularly in the Linderbaum deal, was a huge negative to the whole thing. Huge negative. And the worst thing was that they had to give a fifth-year option to Hamilton, and they didn't give one to Linderbaum. And, you know, we saw it coming a mile away that it was going to be a problem. And sure. You know, they had time before that thing was done to try and get that deal done. And frankly, it probably would have cost them more at that point, given where Linderbaum was after the 23 season in particular. And then he'd only had one bad year in 24 and not a second regressive year in 25 in terms of his pass blocking. Could still recover, by the way. He's played well three of the last four games. So each data point is fresh new information.
Before we move on to Tyler, just the counterpoint of drafting is, you know, Creed Humphrey was a late second round pick.
That's right.
That the Chiefs signed early, that they didn't have the fifth year option as a friction. And he got for a pretty good deal. I mean, considering his ability compared to where he is in the rank.
I'm with you, but I'm okay with the second round pick. I think a second round pick at center is just fine, or at guard is just fine. I'm saying if you're going to use first round draft capital, which is an enormous percentage of your total draft capital in any year, you better have that fifth year. Yeah.
I got you. Okay. Fair. That's a good point.
So let me go back to Voorhees for a second, because I do expect Voorhees also to be back. And I think he's, as the incumbent, he's the most likely to start, even if the Ravens draft a guy in, say, the second round. If they draft a first rounder, they'll probably just plug and play for Voorhees. But if they drafted a second rounder, I think Voorhees still starts with the starting role. It's not a sure thing. And they benched Cleveland after he had looked good for stretches in his first 2 years. Mm-hmm. But if they were to get a left guard, obviously they're going to want another guy who's mobile. I actually think they're going to prioritize mobility with that. And they'd like to have two guys at least who they think can play left guard and meet the mobility where Voorhees could be the backup or the starter. And they could get another guy who they think at least can handle the mobility needs of the position. Cause that's been really lacking from Falele fairly obviously in terms of moving to the left. It looks terrible doing it. And the other guys, Cleveland has never really looked good as a puller. And it's not something I'm expecting Emory Jones to be particularly good at given his size.
Play so tackle.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So we'll see. But I think mobility will be one of the factors that they look at. Now they need a pass blocker too in that position, obviously. Yeah.
For sure. So yeah, you can do a lot worse than Andrew Voorhees as a backup. And if he, continues to develop, then he can earn a starting job too.
Let's move on to center. So Tyler Linderbaum, obviously one of the biggest questions is whether or not they can find the right price for Linderbaum coming up this year. And I think Voss and I have...
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Ben, we don't always agree on things, but I think we agree on this one, is that he's definitely got to be treated with a right player, right price mentality.
Yes. I heard a rumor that their starting offer was $12 million a year, the Ravens was.
Wow. Okay.
Which is pretty low. So to me, it's not just a question of a few dollars in average per year salary. It's not a huge deal if it's $12 million or $15 million or wherever you are, $3 million here, $3 million there. That's, a replacement level, not a replacement level, but that's a back end of the roster or mid-tier guy. To me, the big question is, do you want a player that's a below average pass blocking center eating up one of your cornerstone contracts? And me personally, I do not.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair enough. And I guess I would look at the last 3 years and say, what was really the underlying cause for the failed pass blocking? So I think his rookie year was being overwhelmed by opposing size. In his second year, he had a very good pass blocking year. In fact, it was probably one of the most exciting things on the 23 Ravens team, which is one of the best rosters in DVOA history, was the fact that Tyler Linderbaum had made this huge step forward as a pass blocker. And if that could be continued, man, the Ravens would really have something again. Then he took a step back. And I said, okay, well, some regression was expected. I didn't expect him to be as great in 24 as he was in 23. And some regression is okay. But then he regressed again further to now where he's 24th of 32 of the 50% guys in PFF at center as a pass blocker. And he had been 31st of 32, by the way, earlier this
last
year.
Last week he was. Before this last game he was. Yeah, I remember that from last week. I think 23 was... he was between Simpson, who had a good year, and Zeitler, right? That was the year with Zeitler and Moses. That was, an undersized center could certainly benefit from good guard play, but I don't want to pay a guy $20 million a year that you also have to put another good player next to him to elevate him. That's really where I am.
Yeah, great point. And I think that's a really reasonable thing. I'm kind of tired of the arguments that the guard play is bringing Linderbaum down. I'm not saying they haven't let him down at all, just like you, I think. I'm just saying he needs to elevate them and not the other way around. And frankly, his pass blocking has been a lot worse than even Fa'alele's pass blocking. So.
Agreed. Okay.
All right, well, let's move on to right guard.
We talk about what we think is going to be the solution for next year. If they cannot re-sign Linderbaum, and it doesn't seem like that's a high likelihood, I'm pretty bullish on Bullock. I think that with next to maybe a stud guard that we were talking about adding in the top second round, maybe, then they'd be pretty good. And if not, you can probably find a serviceable center in the mid rounds, in the fourth round. I mean, you had Bradley Bozeman had a good year here. Matt Skura was undrafted. Centers aren't the hardest thing in the world to find because they're smaller than the other two, and it's a size and shape pool at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I would probably start with Bullock. Bullock was an effort to find a bigger guy who was kind of an anti-Linderbaum a little bit in that regard. But Bullock is a bigger, more physical player. He's not particularly long, but he's longer than Linderbaum, so hopefully will give you a little bit of that. I like him as at least a backup. Let's put it that way. I think if he comes in, he starts day one because their other center isn't ready. So you go out and you find yourself a player. And, as soon as I say in the third or fourth round, people are going to think, well, Gino Kratkowski was, that's the round you got him.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Another undersized guy. That was the problem with him.
But I think they can go out and they can find a center in some round that they like. I think if you really want a stud center, I think the second round is the one that you're willing to reach into. And particularly, the Ravens appear to be now they're going to be drafting in the back 12. Of the second round now, after they've revived their season, it appears that way. And that being the case, the pick is so valuable that we should be concerned about expending on a center there, I would think.
There's a guy named Cade Mays, who I believe was a fifth or sixth round pick for Carolina, who's playing really well, and he was a high-end recruit that played for Georgia, and then I believe he transferred to Tennessee. I think the key is get a bigger guy. Jeremy Zuda, another center that was undersized that struggled. Let's get a bigger center. That's really, to me, one of the keys to retooling this offensive line.
All right. Well, then Bullock might be a good guy for that, for starters. Ready to move to right guard then?
Please.
Let's do it. So Daniel Fa'alele, I think we would agree, is likely to be gone after this year. And it's not just a matter of, he's underwhelmed or fell short of expectation, though falling short of expectations season year four is not a good thing. But I think someone else will pay him reasonably well. And I think the same thing was set up with John Simpson, that, but he's just got a higher perceived value outside of Baltimore. Did do the Know Your Foe episode with a Jets guy, and he said, we talked last year about John Simpson and all the things you were saying about him being penalized a lot, they're back, the kind of thing. Right. So interesting.
It's a long-standing tradition of overpaying Baltimore guards. I mean, Ben Powers, Ben Bredesen has a big fat contract down in Tampa now. Any prediction on Fa'alele's price? Because I really don't know where the league is on him. I don't.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he makes $10 million a year somewhere for 3 years.
Okay.
It wouldn't shock me. If it's less than that, it wouldn't shock me either. I don't think he's a guy who goes out and gets an $18 or $19 million guard contract. No. But that kind of size is just something a lot of people can be enamored with. The thing that people are going to be kind of upset with is they don't think he fulfilled on – the promise in 24 that he showed at the end of, sorry, the promise in 25 that he showed at the end of 24. And I think if someone's really looking at that, they'll say, what happened? And they may even ask him that question as part of the negotiation process. And I'm not sure he's going to have a very good answer.
Yeah. Apparently he's never given an interview from the podium since he's been with the Ravens.
Did not know that.
Yeah. They've been protecting him.
Yeah, but by the way, I have asked for that interview, just a personal interview, and say, well, could I do it? Could I have him on a podcast? Right. And could I? I've got the same response. Is that?
Yeah,
there have been people who've gotten him on the side, I think, but nobody's gotten him at the podium. Yeah.
Okay. So looking forward, Anthony Jones is apparently now he's listed as a guard on the team website, and he played right tackle in college. So the natural progression is right guard with the footwork still relatively similar. I'm hoping to see some good things out of Anthony Jones. Some thought it was a reach in the draft in the third. I guess if you took the injury into account, it probably was. Mm-hmm. But he's a player with a lot of upside. He's a younger player, drafted as a junior, 3-year starter at an SEC program. We know a lot of good linemen come out of the SEC, probably SEC Big Ten, just like maybe every position, but those are the two best conferences for linemen. And in addition to that, I would actually look the veteran route here and see if, as we're kind of envisioning, you draft a high pick that can compete at left guard, and then you maybe add a veteran at right guard to give some insurance behind Emory Jones. Not sure you want to go all the way up to Kevin Zeitler, who's making $9 million a year this year, but can you get Zeitler for $6 million maybe? I don't know. Somebody in that range, I do think that if we're really going to make this a priority now, what was it, 2 years ago when they lost Moses and Zeitler and Simpson, and they said, we're going to retool the line. Maybe you're retooling it two times in 3 years. You put a little bit more assets into it this time.
Yeah. Well, it's fair. And they've had to do it multiple times. Their younger players in general have not worked out recently, which is the first time in a long time that's been true for the Ravens. The Ravens have had, not saying they've had every young player work out, but they've had a whole lot of hits on mid and later round picks that have done well. When you go back to Rick Wagner and Ryan Jensen and all kinds of players like that. But one of the things they had also was they had a full enough group of offensive linemen that they could wait for some of these guys to mature in year three, mature in year four, and get value out of them. So it's a difficult thing. I'd be fine with a Kevin Zeitler coming back. I think if you lose Linderbaum, you're probably also looking for an offensive line leader, and mm-hmm. It's not obvious that you'd have one at left guard. I don't think Bullock is necessarily the guy right away. Who knows? Maybe, but I don't see it. And tackle is not usually where you have your leader. It's usually an IOL position. So even though Ronnie Stanley could be, grandfather or father in the offensive line meeting rooms, you're going to want to have an interior guy who really understands how the protections work out and whatnot.
That's a great point, Ken. I think that's a great point. We've said it before. You want to have, an older vet, on a third contract vet, and then a guy on his prime, and then a couple young guys. That's kind of how you want to have every position mm-hmm. group. I think the safety group suffered from not having a veteran early on in the season until they got mm-hmm. Gilman, and that's what Gilman's kind of brought to them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a legitimate point. I mean, Hamilton can't be everywhere has been the problem of the Ravens defense. By the way, we got a show coming up. I'm going to give a quick plug to the one last thing this week is dedicated to Ravens in-season defensive rebuilds. And whatever you think, all the fire or, I hate Harbaugh, blah, 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 stuff that's out there. Basically, the Ravens have an amazing record these last few years and pretty much the whole Lamar era of rebuilding their defenses on the fly whenever they needed to. It's one of the real, it's a hallmark of the EDC era is that he's been able to do that. So we'll talk about that and some really interesting, I think, stuff to review.
Look forward to it.
All right. Let's move on to Cleveland. Any chance he's back, by the way? Because I think he could be back on a one-year deal, but it's very hard to get any kind of sense of what's going on.
If he doesn't get some type, I think he said 3 snaps this year. If they don't give him a series at some point, what's the point of rostering him? Even if it's only a veteran minimum contract, give that roster spot to somebody you're actually willing to put on the field is my opinion on that one.
Okay. Well, I'm with you that I think that it would make it wouldn't make sense from maybe his perspective to do it again. I don't know if there's a market for him at all. I mean, I think the Ravens, with their silence in some ways and with the inactivity as well, have very clearly branded him in a certain way for the rest of the league. It's not like like a David Ajabo has been a sad tale of not really producing, and maybe somebody else looks at it and says injuries. We understand the Falele thing. I think it's a stylistic fit in a lot of ways that some other team may say, hey, look, he's your trash, he's our treasure, because mm-hmm. our guard play has been a hell of a lot worse than what Daniel Falele has done. We'll give him a shot based on size alone.
He's the 45th best guard in the league, which is a starter. Just a lot of teams. We're just hoping for better here. That's all.
Well, that's close enough to have two. So with Cleveland, it would just be if they want a cheap backup still, I don't think he's a bad choice, but I have no idea who Ben Cleveland is as an offensive lineman right now. No idea at all. I mean, no. The scored snaps are so far in the past. What do we know about him?
Not very much. Not very much for sure. His hair looked like it's gotten twice as gray as it was when he was drafted. But young man for gray hair. As a man that's got a lot of gray hair myself, I look at him and say, I'm glad I didn't get gray as young as he did. But you see him in the locker room on Rottweiler, and he's got a early gray. Anyway, maybe that's causing some wisdom. He's going to be a little bit more technically sound. Who knows?
All right, let's move over to right tackle, where Rosengarten's play has been more or less on par with last year. So he's down, actually, if I look at raw score, by 2 points this year, 73 down to 71, which cost him about a grade level from maybe a B-minus C-plus border down to a C. What I'd say about that is he's probably dealt with a little less help this year, which is that part is good, but he's played probably at 2 points lower. It's probably about as much as I would expect given, the reduction in help, maybe even a little bit. He's been a little bit worse than I would have expected given the reduction in help. So it hasn't been a year of moving forward for Roger Rosengarten. I think that's fair to say.
I would agree. I would agree with that. I did see one of those XY graphs that was how much help you're getting versus how much you win your pass block. And both Rosengarten and Ronnie Stanley were sort of right in the middle of that axis, right in the middle of the T, which tells me they were getting more help next year. And I think that's a product of the interior lineman not playing as well, Patrick Ricard missing early time, Patrick Ricard maybe not playing quite as well also.
I'll give you one more reason why that's probably true, the getting help, is they're looking at the number of snaps, or as a percentage, the number, the snaps that they get an additional chip or set block. Because the predominant way that other teams have approached the Ravens is to crowd the line of scrimmage and create one-on-one situations across. There's not a man to do that. There isn't an eligible receiver to do that. So it can be some scheme. And I think that's what I have really noted in terms of the ATS. And Lamar is at 6-7 out of 60 ample time and space options last 2 weeks. I mean, it's crazy, but they only got 2 out of 30 against Minnesota, and that was largely scheme related. Is that they were crowding the line of scrimmage, that Flores, cover zero look on a lot of plays, and they're just, you can't block everybody. And on the second game against the Browns, they had more opportunity to get their blocking right. Wasn't perfect. I mean, they used 5 and 6, 40% of the time total between those two. But they rushed four enough, and Lamar was totally unsuccessful with four that they had some blocking problems with that.
I mean, you can go all the way back to Lamar's rookie year, the playoff game against the Chargers, to see somebody crowding the line of scrimmage and giving the Ravens trouble. It's not a brand new thing. So like Carball said with the Hurricane play, where they evolved from trying to jam it up the middle with Andrews to obviously the deception, that's the continue to develop those counter punches. That's really the name of the game. That's how you win championships.
Fair enough. Okay. And all of this we're talking about, we're basically stretching the tarpaulin really tight over these starters, but that tarpaulin will be very thin. They really need a fair amount of depth on this team, which means that I think they're going to have another pick, and they got to be intentional about how they do that. So they got to either know that they're keeping 10 offensive linemen, if they're going to go ahead and bring somebody else in later in the draft. The loss of Dellinger this year, I'm still kind of pissed off about it. It might not have worked out, but it's a loss of an opportunity for something to work out, to have your guy pilfered from you because he doesn't really see a spot for himself.
Yeah. I mean, he was a late round pick. So if they didn't see it, they didn't see it. I'm not necessarily upset about it, but They are rostering 10 at the moment with Emory Jones. So since Jones has been back, they've had 10. And I think 10's the number. So I think, to me, in the world where the Ravens have 5 fourth-round picks or 6 fourth-round picks, you spend one of these fourth-round picks. I think you need a top 60 pick and 2 fourth-round picks is how I would attack this group. And some players can be shuffled. If you get a really good veteran right guard, then Jones can compete with Rosengarten or backup Rosengarten at tackle. It could be shuffled around. But in an ideal world, you know, you get a fourth round developmental right tackle who's a little bit thicker than Vincent and a little bit more stout. But basically that type of player, maybe from a small school, would be great. And that's your but I think you need to add three rookies and one veteran. So you're adding four players. That's a retool for sure.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So three rookies and one veteran. It could be like that. It could be one cheap discard pile guy from another mm-hmm. team, meaning on his rookie deal still, and then one guy that you pay a little bit more money, and Kevin Zeitler will use as the Kevin Zeitler position, and right. the two guys who you draft. But it's very hard for it'd be very hard for the Ravens to go out and draft like three guys and have them all be on that same early developmental track.
Right. True.
It'd be like the tight end problem that would, you know, potentially all come to it in 1 year.
True.
All right. We got some mailbag questions this week. Let's go through them. You want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So from R. Clay Prodigal, also to circle back on a storyline from the offseason, we seem to have an answer on whether Mahomes, Reed, Spagnuolo, Chiefs had somehow cracked the code for consistently winning close games. Reversion to the mean is a hell of a drug.
So that's a comment, and it's a damn good one. It's right on the money. Is you know, baseball, they say the same thing. Clutch performance is a harsh mistress. It doesn't usually hold up over time. Nope. And the Chiefs have been absolutely astoundingly good at winning close games during the Mahomes era. And you know, it's at some point you figure it's not sustainable. And that was part of my argument about why the stuff about the Ravens and losing close games was not as big a concern as people were making it out to be. I also think the Steelers are at a non-sustainable level of winning close games.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with the point. This is a big week for KC. If they lose to Indy this week, they really could be on the outside looking in. So, you know, they have this, what is it, a seven-year streak of conference championship game appearances in a row, I believe. At least sounds six.
Right. Five home, one road, one home, right?
Yep, I think so. So, you know, I just as a quick aside, though, I do believe that the way they construct their roster is a pretty smart way to do it when you have a high paid quarterback, where you bolster the O-line, you have a high paid quarterback, you have a lot of B-level receivers and pass catchers, and then pass defenders, and you sacrifice a little bit of running back, and you sacrifice a little bit of run defense. Because look, I mean, it has produced pretty good results for them, and I think as the Ravens get into maybe Lamar's third contract, or at least the second part of his second contract, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, they've used some draft capital at the wide receiver position still, particularly with Worthy in terms of going out there. And the Ravens have done some of that too. But you know, it's going to get more difficult when they have to let a player like Zay Flowers walk. You'll say because of Lamar's money, but because their total amount of resources available in the organization just won't match what he needs to be paid. That's going to be tough, and it's actually going to be also, I think, a tough moment for Lamar in terms of his potential frictions with the organization over that.
Yeah, it is. I had that noted. I mean, he is eligible for the early extension after this season, say Flowers, but not for $35 million. I don't see it. So we should do a show in the next couple of weeks. We're probably not going to do next week because it's on Thanksgiving, but about players that have improved their stock. And, you know, some things have happened since last time we did it. Maybe the tight end room.
Sounds good.
A little bit of shake up.
Yeah, that's it'd be worth looking at. So the next question is from Haroon Ahmed. It says Alex Wright just signed a 3-year extension for $11 million AAV with the Browns. He's been a productive defensive end with 5 sacks in 23. Could this deal lubricate extension discussions for Travis Jones?
I think it's a good contract for Cleveland. I don't think it has any bearing on Jones. Different positions, different places. Travis Jones is one of the most desirable free agents of all the league. I don't believe those list they put out that have Linderbaum way ahead of Jones. I think that's the media's fantasy based on draft position, not what's really going on. I put teams that are watching the games closely. I do think it could maybe impact Tavius Robinson's early extension, potentially. Mm-hmm. He'll be 3 years after the season, but I don't think Tavius has been the player, either the pass rusher or the run stopper of Wright, and the greats back that up. So, you know, maybe if Tavius can come in 20% lower than that or so, it could be a good value for both sides.
Yeah, I really liked Alex Wright as a guy they might have acquired at the trade deadline this year. Mm-hmm. I thought he'd have been a really good option. But yeah, it's surprising to me that the Browns are like going kind of pricey at the position given how that roster is put together. I mean, they are really staring the Deshaun Watson money right in the face. And I heard something about Deshaun Watson might start practicing, which, boy, that's the one additional thing that Cleveland could make it that much funnier the rest of the year.
Yeah, what a conundrum. Well, let's transition into Ann's Love's question because it deals with Tavius in specifically. With Tavius coming back soon, how will we fit into the rotation, especially with the addition of Dre Jones? Also, I thought Lamar Jackson looked okay last game. Could the Ravens be saving his legs for the playoff push or when facing the Steelers in Cincinnati?
Okay. I mean, it was one of the worst games of Jackson's career. So I wouldn't really say that. The Ravens have been very fortunate. They've won all four games where Lamar has had a 60 mm-hmm. or lower passer rating in his career. But that's not what I want to see from Jackson. I want to see two pop-ups like that off batted balls and what happened. He put the ball in danger in the end zone too and got lucky on it. I don't think they're really saving him. In fact, I kind of think it's going the opposite way, that they're playing him because they have to. This feels like Mickey right. Mantle in the 60s really trying to get every game they possibly can out of him. But if Tavius is coming back, I expect him to jump in there with a very full role right away. I mean, Ajabo snaps are completely up for grabs. When Tavius comes back, Ajabo probably sits, and Tavius should be that. You know, bulwark early down defender. And I think we'll probably see him some on passing downs too.
Yeah. So Lamar first, I mean, he's nicked up. He said he was banged up today at the podium. And he said he's probably going to take Wednesdays off maybe for the rest of the year, at least in the immediate future. I did see something from the Ringer, I believe, that his designed rushes are half of last year. I think they were about five last year and about 2.5 so far this year. You know, they're doing it out of necessity. I don't think they're saving him necessarily. You do what you got to do to win the games, right? And on the topic of Tavius, completely agree with you there. Take all of Ojabo's snaps and take Ojabo's roster spot, right? Because you're going to need a roster spot mm-hmm. from Tavius. And I also think taking a lot of Mike Green's early down snaps will be beneficial too. Green's, he's going to hit that rookie wall. I mean, he's come from a small school. He played a ton of snaps. All rookies hit the wall. He got dinged up last week. He didn't have his best game last week. So Tavius should be play a lot of snaps. We did see KVN had a pretty good game last week too, which was encouraging. So that's a pretty good looking group if you have Tavius, not Ojabo.
Draymond.
Jones. Yeah, right. KVN and Mike Green. So, yeah, hopefully he can get back out. But I would temper expectations just a little bit because it's not easy coming back from foot injury sometimes.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we need to – we probably should have lower expectations. And, Mike Green, he's a lot of the Ravens' chance to like go on a Super Bowl run mm-hmm. is tied up in several rookies and several rookie defenders, really. It's the maybe four you can pick. If I'm including Keon Martin in that group just because he's been incredible these last 2 weeks and he could really be a big part of the process and help alleviate some of the cornerback lack of depth the team has. I mean, if they move their three outside corners, including Humphrey, back to playing only outside, all of a sudden you don't have really the same depth problem at all. If you have Martin and Hamilton taking over the slot corner role, but now Martin's injury puts the team in a questionable position. And the night in the hospital, I hadn't heard. That's really bad news. Corey Ivey was the guy I remember doing that before. Remember the emergency?
Harbaugh said Harbaugh said he didn't want to go on the plane in case they wanted to make sure he was okay before he went on the plane. So some of the trainers went with him. He was at the post-game celebration. You know, he got a game ball, and they were all hugging him. And then I guess he got his ribs cracked. Maybe he has a broken rib. I'm not quite sure. But thank mm-hmm. God it's not a heart condition or something. Last question, and great questions this week, especially everybody. Appreciate it. This is from Connor Keller-Strauss. Thoughts on allotment of snaps / packages if and when Ardarius Washington returns?
So, unfortunately, my position on this always is it's usually decided for you by injury. So, if Starks, Gilman, and Hamilton are all fine, then you have a good problem. If you don't have that, then Ardarius fills in wherever he's needed. So that would be my guess. A fourth guy to add to that is Keon Martin. Is if he's not ready to play, then maybe Ardarius is your nickel dime guy, and he starts off playing 18, 19 snaps a game like the Ravens have used in dime recently, and hopefully he could really give you something there, because he's certainly a versatile and good downhill defender who brings a lot of what Hamilton otherwise does at that spot.
Yeah, Gilman, I'm sorry. Yeah, so Washington, again, I temper expectations. He tore his Achilles this calendar year, so there's never any guarantee. You know, Suggs came back early, but he didn't look like Suggs, and he wasn't playing corner or, you know, defensive back either, quick twitch. But if he can come back, I expect him to eat into a little bit of Gilman's snaps and also maybe help fill in the slot and as nickel when Hamilton's in dime. Don't think Washington's reinsertion would change the schemes necessarily and the packages. But I would like to see Ardarius versus Gilman, not head-to-head, but I do think they're sort of competing for one spot next year because they're both up for free agency.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want to see who's better. You know, Gilman's been pretty good, but Ardarius has been good too. So let's see.
Yeah, great point. And they may not be at the exact same price point, particularly with Ardarius coming off the injury. Did they already sign Ardarius for one more year?
I thought they gave him the RFA, one of the tags for this year, right before he got hurt. And then we were talking about before he even signed it. And we said, can they rescind it? Well, wouldn't be good for him. That wouldn't be good for him. I'll look that up, I guess, if you'd like, before the outro.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to say about the Ardarius situation is I don't think Gilman's spot is as secure, but the one thing it is 100% secure is that they're staying with Big Nickel. They haven't played a single snap, not even one single snap of standard nickel since they moved Hamilton. And that basically means throw whoever you want to against Kyle Hamilton, and they're just going to deal with that as its own problem rather than make some scheme change where they're taking Kyle Hamilton off the line of scrimmage again.
Yeah, and I hope they stick with the dime too, because it's been tremendous. So Ardarius did sign they hit him with the right of first refusal tender, and then he signed the one-year RFA for $3.3 million right after he injured himself. Mm-hmm. But he will be up for grabs this coming spring.
Okay, so probably still an affordable option if the Ravens want to go that way for 2026. Yeah. And we wish Ardarius the best. I mean, he was just a very fun player in 2024, and he was one of the guys who fixed the defense, you know, as we're going to talk about coming up.
The goal line fumble of Wilson was one of the plays of the year. I love that play.
Yeah, that was a great one. All right. Voss, always a pleasure to do the show with you. Tell folks where you are online and how they can reach you, and also what your current project is.
Yes. So I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. Fiamata is the name of our restaurant concept that we opened in March, located at 2900 Baltimore Boulevard, Italian restaurant and lounge. And we encourage you to please consider us for your holiday celebrations.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for the really good questions today. As Voss said, hit us up with hashtag film study mailbag. And comments are good. Really appreciate the comment from Red Clay Prodigal, as opposed to just people asking a question. You don't have to have an actual question. We'll still talk about it on the show. Also want to get opinions from people, if you will, after you listen to this pod, on the new format I'm using online with these shorter videos. And I tend to be long-winded no matter what I do in terms of explaining things because I want to be thorough. But if you think they need to be even pithier in particular, let me know and I'll take that under advisement. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more, all at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale, now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.